Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Lingraphica Radio, everyone. This is the final episode of our four-part series featuring Dr. Audrey Holland. Audrey has been with us all month to help us celebrate Aphasia Awareness Month. Today, we'll be learning about research and innovation in support of people with aphasia. Dr. Holland has been a long-term advocate of the life participation approach to aphasia, which we've discussed throughout this series, and we'll probably touch on that again today. Also joining us is Lingraphica's Chief Executive Officer, Andrew Gomery. Welcome to both of you guys.
Thanks, Steve. Good morning.
Thank you.
Well, Audrey, it's always a pleasure to talk together. Thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure, too.
Good. Audrey, let's just dive right in. You know, over the past few decades, we've seen a lot of change in the world for people with aphasia, especially very recently. And, you know, I'm thinking of the big we here, research and clinical side, which you've been intimately involved in, as well as sort of the product side, which is where Lingraphica comes in. We've seen a lot of change, but have things really gotten better for people with aphasia? What's your take on where we are now and how we're doing?
Well, to me, over the last, you know, my professional career, actually, I think one of the things that has really probably most significantly changed is that you no longer can do treatment where you're not talking about how this is going to affect somebody's everyday life. And that while 30, 40 years ago, you could get by with doing treatment studies that concentrated on, say, simply word retrieval or something like that. And if you were going to do any kind of generalization testing, you looked at another set of words. And nobody was really concerned with whether or not what you were doing in aphasia treatment had any applicability to your everyday life. And that, to me, is the very, very biggest change. It seems to me now that I would be very, very surprised if any research that you submit someplace for funding where you just say, we're going to see how aphasic people learn, whatever, could ever get funded, because now you have to say, learn what and how can we tell it in their lives? And I think that is a significant change.
Mm-hmm. Audrey, you know, I really agree that that's been a big change in research, and I think, you know, you've been a big part of that, especially with the emphasis on the life participation approach, which I will venture to say you're roughly describing there. To what extent do you think this has trickled down into the everyday actual clinical practice with our SLPs in the world?
Well, that's what I think is important, and I really think it isn't just the research. I think that, you know, now people are being taught, and clinicians are being taught, and that expectations are that whatever you're going to do in the clinic, it's a fair question to say to you, okay, what does that have to do with this person's life? So I see it as it isn't all trickled down yet, but it's trickling down pretty rapidly, and I think that's probably the most important and the largest clinical change, too. So I was really talking clinically in that.
Okay. Well, that's encouraging. Do you see a change, say, in the way courses are being taught, since that would obviously be a way to get the younger generation of SLPs on board with what you're talking about?
I think that's beginning to happen, and I think it's also beginning to show itself in what is expected for reimbursement for clinical work. I don't think it's far from being totally there, but I think it's clear that the emphasis is on how well someone can get back to everyday life, and that's sooner or later going to be the force that drives payment and clinical practice and everything else. So I'm cautiously optimistic about all of that. So what do you think are the most significant ways that technology,
mm-hmm.
Andrew, is moving this kind of movement along, or any other, as you see
mm-hmm.
it?
I'll come back to the second, but I thought you hit on something really important there, which is I think when the reimbursement can start to be a driver in this thing is when we're going to really know that the change is there. So I think to the extent that reimbursement is now has to be justified by just the kinds of things you were talking about, then we know we've really got something in place. But to answer your question, I think really the big changes that have affected consumers are the same ones that are affecting people with aphasia, and that's the ubiquitous spread of high-speed broadband and the spread of touchscreen tablet computers. You know, so from our side, we're really talking really now on the compensatory side of speech-generating devices, but it wasn't very long ago when we and the other manufacturers were specialty manufacturers making touchscreen computers so that people with aphasia and other disabilities could operate them. And now, obviously, that's just a commonplace thing. And I think the broadband has taken a little bit of time to get in there, but communicating on the Internet, as you and I have discussed a number of times, is just a tremendous boon for people with aphasia. That kind of communication, you know, that has pauses built into it, as opposed to a conversation where I can write you an email, a text, and all the supportive ways that those things can be done are just tremendously important for connecting people with aphasia back into their communities. And, you know, here's something that I think is a really interesting reflection of that. You know, as you know, speech-generating devices were almost put out of business by Medicare last year. But once they turned around, they actually expanded the Medicare benefit so that speech-generating devices now have the ability to be on the Internet, send email, and send text. This is a huge turnaround by Medicare, acknowledging that communicating over the Internet is critical for people with aphasia, and that, in fact, we can now build it into their speech-generating devices. So I think those things which consumers have benefited now for a number of years are finally coming home to roost for people with aphasia.
I couldn't agree more. And to me, that is just incredibly exciting. And I think that's where the effort has to go. And I want to get back to your point about our responsibility to really lobby heavily for payment of services when third-party reimbursers get that notion. That, I think, is going to be the critical feature in really moving us forward. I think that's what you're saying, isn't it, Andrew?
Absolutely. You know, getting to the research side, what's exciting you about, what exciting things are you seeing in research? What are you thinking about most these days?
Well, what is most interesting to me, and this is not an abstract interest, although it has scholarly properties to it, is that there is research going on, I think, pretty much across at least the English-speaking world, that looks to what is going on in the brain, not just when people process language, but what is going on in the brain as a result of treatment. And I'm really, I'm convinced that not necessarily in the next 5 years, but we are soon going to be at a point because of our neuroimaging studies where we're much better capable of matching what is the best way to go about treating this particular problem.
Are you talking about the research involving fMRIs?
fMRI, imaging of all kinds, not just fMRI,
mm-hmm.
but all diffusion tensor imaging, the whole band, the whole sort of box of technologies that come from the world of imaging, and of course the best known one is fMRI.
Right. Well, it is interesting thing, you know, certainly all these customized and personalized cancer treatments get a lot of publicity, but it sounds like you're describing something similar here, which is if we know what's going on in your brain, we could really pinpoint a therapeutic approach that would be extremely effective for the individual as opposed to the sort of broad brush approach we take now.
Yeah,
is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm getting at. And I don't think because language is, you know, much more pervasive, I don't think it's going to be the kind of really fine-tuning technical stuff that is necessary in individual drug treatment, so I don't see it as costly in that way at all.
Oh, well, that's that would be a good thing.
It sure would.
So, Audrey, being a tech guy, I want to talk about two of the big changes that I see happening, you know, coming down the road, especially, you know, for us. But these are personal interests of mine, and so Lingraphic tends to reflect that, being a technology company. And the big one we focus on right now is telemedicine. There has been so much. This is something that is starting to get publicity and starting to make progress, although it really is not doing much for people in the rehab side. But we really think that telemedicine has a tremendous amount to offer people with aphasia, and in fact people with all kinds of cognitive issues, especially during the rehab phase, where they're going to need, let's say, you know, a lifetime's worth of treatment over the long haul with a continuous effect. One of the things I see is I don't see any way to help people in the way they really need help except through telemedicine. What are your thoughts on the telemedicine thing?
Well, I think I quite agree with you, particularly people who are far away from provision of direct services or don't have an opportunity to join an aphasia group or to go to a center. I think particularly for that hunk of the aphasia population, which who knows how big that portion of the population really is. So that's going to be life-saving, particularly
yep.
for them.
It, you know, we've done some studies, and we've certainly convinced ourselves that about the effectiveness of telemedicine. It's interesting to see that Australia, of all places, is really leading the charge in this, and I think England is far behind. It's funny that that it's caught on so much more quickly in these other parts of the English-speaking world.
Well, part of my response to that is that, I mean, Australia knows how much territory it has, and it thinks of itself as having its population, you know, widely dispersed, with the exception of the big cities. We don't seem to know that in the United States, but it's also true here.
That's a great point. And I better throw Canada into that mix, since they've been at this thing for a long time before I offend people north of the border. But I think you're right. These countries, it's a really interesting point. The countries that view themselves as big rural countries, they know how hard it is to deliver anything, any sort of meaningful medicine. And it really just makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point that we don't view ourselves. I know that 40% of the veterans, I think the VA is on this, which is why they've been so at the forefront of telemedicine. 40% of the veterans live in rural areas, and they have a tremendous problem delivering services to them.
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
go on ahead, Andrew. I was just going to say, since this is the last one of these, I really want to make sure that I mention how really exciting our recent developments in trying to get more services for people with aphasia in the long term. The development of a nonprofit group called Aphasia Access. I mean, I'm very excited about all this because I was involved in the founding of that group. But our concern is to spread out our talents as widely as possible and share with each other and improve the kinds of things that have to do with people long-term after suffering a stroke and it's not just for people with aphasia, it's their families as well. So a long time after stroke. So I just want to make sure I got that point in our last talk.
Absolutely. I mean, long term, I think, is the critical thing here. We know that people with aphasia will continue to get better as long as they work at it. And
that's right.
And what I look at, Aphasia Access, which is a fabulous organization, what we're trying to do, we're really trying to make up for a deficit in the medical system, which wants to treat people, is designed to treat people episodically. People get a lot of treatment right after their stroke and then typically, fall off the cliff and get nothing. And we're really trying to step in there and say, no, if we can find a way to deliver encouragement, practice, treatment, all of those things together over the long term, people are going to get better for as long as they live and as long as they choose to work at it. And that's a big challenge, but you know, with Aphasia Access and some of the work we're doing, I think we've got the right approach, and at least we're trying to take that on.
Yeah, I do too, and I'm happy with the way things are going. I wish they'd go faster, but I'm happy.
Well, good. Before we close up here, Audrey, any other closing thoughts? I know you got a big one in there. Anything else you'd like to leave everyone with?
No, I think that's I'd like that message to get through loud and clear. So no more from me.
Okay, and I'm just going to leave people with my final thought, which is, to the extent that we can use mainstream technology, things like touchscreens, broadband, telemedicine, to bring a good effect to people with aphasia, and not focus so much on all the specialty things we need to do, I think we're going to move ahead more quickly. People with aphasia are intelligent. They have a lot of ability. And if we can simply give them a little help to use what's out there as opposed to recreating the world for them, I think we're going to see a lot faster progress. So that's my final one as well. On that note,
Audrey,
Steve, can we turn it back to you?
Thank you very much. Sorry, Audrey, go ahead.
No, I have nothing more to say. That's just fine.
This has been a great last show, and it's amazing, Audrey, that you've done this with us for four shows. It's the first time we've done this on the Graphica Radio, so we really are very appreciative of all your time and the insights you've brought to this. And to wrap it up, whether you're a person with aphasia, an SLP, a stroke center, a support group, or a caregiver, or if you're just involved in the technology to help those with aphasia or apraxia, please check out facesofaphasia.com to share your story. This is the last few days as we wind up Aphasia Awareness Month, and the interest in the website has been tremendous, facesofaphasia.com. If you go there, you'll be able to download a free ebook, and the demand on that ebook has been just absolutely tremendous. I'm sure the number's over 300 now. It might be up to 400 by today. You can also submit your story, and we will send you a free poster, a giant infographic with all sorts of facts and figures on the story of aphasia and dealing with aphasia, the aphasia journey. Again, the URL is facesofaphasia.com to share your story and participate. And everyone, thank you for listening in to this four-part series on Aphasia Awareness Month. And please check out the website again, facesofaphasia.com. Andrew and Audrey, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again soon.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Steve. And Audrey, always great talking with you.
You too. Take care.